for my brothers, and for Mom. There is no despair so absolute as that which comes with the first moments of our first great sorrow, when we have not yet known what it is to have suffered and be healed, to have despaired and have recovered hope. George Eliot, from Adam Bede. Chapter 1. Daniel A. Shepherd would have been lost forever had not the lighthouse beam brought him back to life. In sweeping strokes, it painted the blackness in ribbons of white, awakening his spirit with each pass over his body, gently drawing him out of the blackness into which he had fallen. He dropped his arm over his face, suspecting a crack in the hotel drapes, but the light shone through nevertheless, as if the sleeve of his fleece jacket were no more than a thin cotton sheet. He rolled over on his side. A sharp pain sliced through his thighs, forcing him fully awake. His legs were on fire. He slapped at the flames, but when he looked down, he was fully clothed, his limbs unharmed. The ceiling twinkled, some sort of spray glitter he'd failed to notice before. But no, the sparkles were too far away. And the air smelled fresh, not the typical hotel air, heavy with the scent of old socks. He'd expected the usual lumpy beds and noisy cooling fans. It wasn't long before he realized this was no hotel. He was outside. His gaze went first to the flashing light, emanating from an airport tower, he thought, until he heard the roar of the ocean below. Having grown up in Montana, he'd never been to either coast, but now long waves gleamed like threads of lace, appearing and then fading into the deep. He stared, half unsure of what he was seeing, and still they danced in and out under a moonlit sky, the lighthouse showing them off about every 20 seconds. A breeze caressed his face, bringing with it the scent of salt and seaweed, and then he noticed the sand cool between his fingers. He lifted one hand and let the soft grains trickle over his palm. The guys had spoken about heading for the beach after the Los Angeles show, but last he remembered, they hadn't made it out of the bar. The pain returned, biting at his ankles, flames erupting about the hem of his jeans. He recoiled, crab-legging through the sand, one hand slapping at the fire until he fell onto his back. The vision faded to reveal his jeans intact, white cotton socks covering his ankles, the fleece jacket unzipped, his favorite high tops on his feet. "I didn't drink that much," he said out loud, though his tone was less than convincing. He removed his Kawasaki cap and ran his fingers through his thick brown hair, resting his hand on the back of his neck. Jay had asked him to join the others. They'd left the crowd on their feet, an audience of over 1,000 shouting for more. They'd deserved a celebration.
"Jay?" Daniel called. "You there?"
The last show was a blur. All he could remember was his hometown of Butte, Montana, the old grandstand at the fairgrounds lit up with stadium lights as he and the 6 other motorcycle riders flew over the tops of hundreds of heads. But that couldn't be right. They were in L.A. Their last show had to have been in L.A. Behind him, city lights danced in the distance, casting a hazy orange glow into the night sky. His last run up the ramp, he'd done the dead body in the cliffhanger. Or had it been the double grab in the Superman? The night answered only in waves, the sand whispering, "Hush." He had to pick up Tony in San Francisco. The thought came out of the blue. His little brother was attending the Marine camp he'd drooled over for years. He'd be finished on August 29th. If Daniel weren't there, the kid would be left stranded. He glanced at his wrist, but his watch was gone. They were supposed to spend a couple of weeks together before Tony went back to school, though Daniel wasn't sure he was going to let his little brother return to their mother's house. Tony had been in that hellhole long enough. Daniel had an apartment now. They could both stay there. He patted his pockets. No keys, no wallet. But something in the front right. He dug in and pulled out the Matchbox F-14 Tomcat. He had received it as a present when he was young, for Christmas maybe, though he couldn't remember for sure. He'd passed it on to Tony on his 5th birthday, and then Tony had given it back before Daniel had left the hellhole for good. Tony had meant it as a good luck charm, something to keep Daniel safe while he was performing his stunts. Daniel turned it over in his hand, puzzled. A piercing whistle grabbed his attention. He tucked the toy away and stood up. Over the din of the ocean, the whistle came again, a high-pitched tone that spiked and then dropped. He held his breath. There, at the shoreline, down and to the right, the waves crested and crashed, and then a distressed wailing sound of something or someone in pain. It wasn't easy running in the sand, especially in high-top sneakers. Salty grains poked at his heels. As if wanting to help, the lighthouse intermittently showed the way. Here. No, over here. At the crest of the hill, he looked down on a long stretch of beach, the sand smoothed by the tide. To the right, where the moon's glow frosted the shore, loaf-shaped mounds lay marooned among the ocean's refuse, grounded vessels cast aside as if by a storm. Daniel approached with caution. The shadows loomed larger with every step, great sea monsters with invisible faces. 10 feet away, he hesitated. Multiple torpedo-shaped bodies, 12 to 16 feet long, all with aft-facing dorsal fins, lay stranded on the sand. Pilot whales. Tony had taped pictures of them on the walls of his room during his sea creature phase, which had followed his dinosaur obsession. He'd liked the pilot whales best because they looked so much like dolphins, bulbous heads blunted in front, mouths angled up in permanent smiles. Daniel trudged past 5, 10, 12 of them. Some exhaled out their blowholes, spraying weak fountains over their heads. One lifted its tail and then let it fall back with a thud. After 15, he stopped. A new sound drew his ear, something shuffling nearby. He stumbled forward in the darkness and found a baby whale struggling to be near its mother. It was about a third her size, maybe 5 feet long, the smiling mouth deceptively cheerful. Half crouched, Daniel approached. At its side, he paused, extended his hand, and tentatively touched the skin. Slick and rubbery, it was like raw egg over a soccer ball. Tony would be devastated to see his favorite animals dying. The mother Daniel could do nothing for, but looking again at the baby, he shed his fleece jacket and squatted down. The young ones were only about 150 pounds. Tucking one hand underneath the tail, he raised his chin and slid the other under what he thought was the neck, wriggling his fingers through the sand to get a grip. Once he'd secured a good hold, he took a breath and heaved. The whale felt heavier than he'd expected. He pushed hard, forcing his heels into the sand, his thighs straining. Slowly he rose, wobbled a bit, and finally stood upright. The weight settled hard and heavy against his chest. The whale squirmed and Daniel thought he might lose him, but then the animal went still. Daniel walked unsteadily toward the water, the whale's skin slick against his own. He went about 10 feet until his shoes sank into the wet sand, and then a little farther until the ocean came up to his waist. With the current buffeting his body, he let go. The baby swam out, turned, and went back to the shore. Flopping like a hooked fish, it called for its mother. The big whale whistled in answer. Daniel trudged back onto the beach, his chest heaving. Water sloshed in his shoes, his jeans heavy, the breeze cold on his arms. He scooped up the whale, balanced himself, and again carried it to the water. He walked farther out the second time, but still, the baby returned. The dim glow of dawn cast a gray light on the mass suicide before him. He spotted movement in some of the shapes, but only occasionally did a blast of mist escape a blowhole or a low groan overwhelm the ocean's roar. The baby called to its mother in pitiful squeaks and whistles, but she no longer answered back. Daniel knew he should get help, but for most of them, it would be too late. Orion stood tall in the eastern sky, the Big Dipper angling northwest, both dispassionately observing the scene playing out below. A gust of wind cooled Daniel's skin. He shivered under his wet clothes, retrieved his fleece jacket, and pulled it back on. Arms crossed, he walked up the hill. He would find help or the rest of the guys or something. They couldn't be that far off. The whales were nearly out of sight when the baby cried out again, a wild sound like a child's scream of terror. Daniel's flesh lifted off his bones. He ran all the way back. In the water a third time, he waded forward until he could no longer feel the sand under his feet, and then did his best to swim even farther, clinging tightly to the rubbery skin. Kicking hard, he managed a few more feet before the whale slipped away and disappeared into the ocean. Spent, Daniel waded, treading water, the wet jacket heavy on his shoulders as he scanned the shoreline. Moments passed, but he didn't detect any new shapes moving. The waves tossed him up and down, playing with him. He blinked salt water out of his eyes. Come on. Come on. There! Like a geyser, the spout burst from the water. It sparkled momentarily and then dropped and disappeared into the vastness of the ocean. Three times the whale's back arced into the night, the moon shaping its blow into a cream-colored cone until at last everything was quiet, and Daniel swam alone. He leaned back and let the water take him where it would. He would rest for a moment, and then swim back, find a phone, call Jay, and regroup. He'd have a hell of a story to tell Tony when he picked him up. A smile creased his lips. And then the pain returned, and he doubled over with it, his gaze seeking but not finding the flames. With desperate motions, he swam back to the shore. Hands and knees in the sand, he panted hard until the burning cooled and he could lie down. The great sea monsters surrounding him in a silent embrace.